This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
You knew how to get into my dad's garage. You knew how to close the fridge. We have the same scar.
Right here.
And you're wearing my dad's watch.
This watch?
You're me.
Holy
That's classified. But yes.
I once was.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn Sharmila and Arvind. We have what is becoming a bit of a theme for us. We've got two reviews this week because, again, it's a number of releases, albeit not in the cinema. We have two that came out this week on streaming platforms. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about Turning Red, which is on Disney Plus. But today, we're talking about The Adam Project, which is the big Netflix release last week.
Adam Project was pretty exciting for me because it brings together a bunch of things that I really just enjoy watching on screen, no matter what degree of quality it ultimately ends up being. Ryan Reynolds, time travel, Mark Ruffalo, and just these kinds of sci-fi stories that also blend humor and adventure. So I was looking forward to this one, and I will say straight off the bat, this is not going to make anyone's list of like best films of all time. But it's one of those movies that if it's on TV, you know, if we imagine the days of remote controls and channel surfing, if this was on TV, I'd 100% watch it. Just because it's a fun, heartwarming thing to spend time with.
You know, you say it's not the best movie of all time, but I was thinking, is this the best Netflix movie of all time? At least for me, something that I've seen on Netflix, because it's so well put together. It's like the perfect streaming platform film. It's the perfect thing to watch on a Saturday or Sunday, on a weekend when you're relaxing. It's the right runtime. It's not too long. It's not too short. And it has all the star power that comes with a big Netflix blockbuster, quote unquote, right? So Ryan Reynolds is in it. Mark Ruffalo is in it. Zoe Saldana is in it. And Jennifer Garner is in it. So you have like four massive heavyweights doing what they do best in a movie that, like you said, is mediocre at best, but mediocre is not a bad thing in this context.
No, I actually really liked it. And I like it while acknowledging that, again, it is not the best. It's not going to be winning any. It's a People's Choice Awards kind of film.
It is.
You know, it's that kind of film. And also, this is something we can get into in more detail later, but it looks just good enough to be on Netflix, you know, because we've talked before about that Netflix very flat TV look that some of the movies have. And this one, I think, spends just enough money in the places that it needs to spend money on in order to circumvent that. So The Adam Project is a relatively simple conceptual film. You know, Ryan Reynolds plays a pilot who flies back in time on a rescue mission and encounters his younger self. And that is more or less it. There are larger things around family loss. There's stuff around, you know, what it means to break one of the big rules of time travel and all these different things. But the movie starts from that very place of him encountering his 12-year-old self.
So I wanted to say that the boy who plays the younger Ryan Reynolds' self, Walker Scobell, is so good. You know, the thing with time travel movies where different actors play different versions of the same character can be dicey, right? And it often falls on one actor to have to kind of embody the other actor in a particular way. Putting it on a kid to play what Ryan Reynolds could have been as a kid, Walker Scobell is so good. If you showed me videos of this kid and said this was Ryan Reynolds as a child, I would totally believe you. And that kind of adds to the fun of then watching them meet each other and the interaction between them. And the time travel parts are not the strongest aspects of this movie. It's the relationships and the interactions that take you through the weaker aspects of this plot. But I don't care at all because it's just really fun and oftentimes even emotional the way these characters get developed.
So when I was watching the movie, I thought about two other things specifically. One was Jumanji. and the other was Real Steel. If you wanna sell it to someone, right? So you can watch Adam Project, Real Steel, and Jumanji, and you'd get the same vibe, the same performances, the same amount of comedy, but also a bit of drama here and there, like family dynamic stuff. And I think that works. So in a weird way, I think this movie is also a throwback to older movies from the late 90s, the early 2000s, where it doesn't have to be a good time travel film. Like, it's not trying to be, Christopher Nolan levels of let's explain the physics and the theoretical quantum stuff. It's just like bordering on both. So it's a good enough time travel movie and it's a good enough family dynamic film, and you get the best of both worlds.
I mean, I love that you brought up Real Steel, partly because Sean Levy directed that as well. And so there's definitely that kind of vibe and through line in terms of, like you said, right, this combination of just being really heartwarming, but also having the wisecracks and a wisecracking kid and a smart acre kind of approach to life and all these different things. The family thing is really interesting. I'm going to steal from some stuff that I read, basically. This is my disclaimer. But I was reading about how people were talking about this being an intergenerational family movie. And I think that that's probably the best way to describe it, because halfway through, I was like, this film is basically from the 80s, like the setup of it, the premise, even the way that the performances are working. But if you compare it to something like The Goonies, right, it doesn't have that same level of childlikeness. There is a lot of darkness and actually a fair amount of sadness that goes through the whole film. The language, I would say, is also not exactly child-friendly. There's a sequence with a reunited couple that is not child friendly. And so, it's interesting to me to see the ways in which this film is built for kids in one sense, very much for adults and even for older adults, because of the different ways it plays with family relationship. Because of course, there's the encountering of your past self, but then there's also the encountering of your parents, which I think all of us can identify that feeling of it being very bittersweet, right? As an adult, thinking about going back and seeing your parents as they were when you were a child.
All of those aspects you said makes me think that, see, Netflix can, something like a Netflix or any streaming platform can do that in a way that a cinema release can't. They're not necessarily bound by the kinds of ratings that a cinema would be. They don't have to think about the fact that a family may not be comfortable taking their kids to go watch it. At the same time, kids may not want to go with their friends. So narrow casting and streaming is actually perfect for a film that does these things in this kind of way we're not so used to yet, I think. I must say that cursing with a kid in the frame or certain like borderline racy scenes, I was like, whoa, wait, there's a 12-year-old there, man. Like, what are we doing? So that was interesting. And I think it also represents a kind of evolution in terms of what we might think of as blockbusters or adventure films. I wanted to talk about Ryan Reynolds, because you said sad, Lynn. And I have to say, I mean, I've seen Ryan Reynolds do indie stuff. It's been a very long time, but this is probably the saddest I've seen him on screen. And it may sound a little funny to talk about Ryan Reynolds stretching his acting muscles, and I wouldn't say he quite does it here yet, but there are definite scenes here that made me think he's trying something else. He's going for something else. And I really liked it. I thought there's a lot there that I'm hoping to see developed in other projects.
But this movie, more than any of the other recent movies, is when I could notice the Ryan Reynolds shtick. And it kind of got very, very obvious. And most times I don't mind. Like Free Guy, I don't mind. Deadpool, obviously, I don't mind. And I'm not even complaining. Like, I would pay money to see this guy act in any movie. I love Ryan Reynolds. Maybe there should be something new, or maybe there should be new Ryan Reynolds comedy that we should get instead of the same old recycled stuff. But I also understand why it's recycled, because it still works, right? I mean, it's not expired yet. I guess it was like a problem for me specifically.
That's interesting, because I thought that there was something new here, but the newness was that we are finally explicitly seeing Ryan Reynolds get sad. And this, I think, comes from the fact that if we think about, Guy is tragic, you know, like Free Guy.
Yeah.
Guy in Free Guy, he's actually really tragic. Deadpool as well. I'm not even spoiling anything to say, because it happens all like right at the start of the entire series. So tragic what happens to him. And so I think that the thing about Ryan Reynolds that is appealing, and that in some ways sets him, even the horrible nothingness that is Red Notice, like he's a sad person in that. And so I think that there is something about part of his appeal, I think, especially in the ones where he's got a backstory, I'm not talking about Six Underground, is that there is a certain level of sadness. And I thought that this, in The Adam Project, is the first time that he really leaned into it. And so I think the reason why the Ryan Reynolds-ness can sometimes feel like a lot was because I felt like it was almost manic. And that was almost a way to account for how sad the rest of it was going to be. So I don't know. I liked his performance quite a bit. And I liked finally being able to say, Ryan Reynolds, kind of a sad actor, right? In a good way.
No, that's exactly it, I think. Even for me, because all those things, all those roles you said, it's humor and good looks masking pain and older trauma, mistreatment, or
aren't
some kind of emptiness inside. I know, we're totally going there. But this film, more than any other film, actually visualizes it. You get to see the kid that was bullied and beaten and who, you know, lost his dad, who grows up to be this version of Ryan Reynolds. And I think that's what worked for me. But I do think, Arvind, that where maybe what you're saying comes in is that the movie sometimes isn't sure what to do with that. And that's why sometimes it feels uncomfortable, because it swings from like this deeply emotional family scene to like a sudden wisecrack. It's almost like it doesn't trust itself to go too deep.
Because it doesn't want to dilute the Ryan Reynolds comedy bits for the more emotional parts, right? Yeah. I think for me, the most surprising bit about The Adam Project was that there's no room for a sequel. And I think that's all the detail that we can give. I know they can go places, but it was kind of interesting to see, like, you know, it's, you have to sort of dig deep to come up with more stories here. And that was an interesting point.
We're talking today about The Adam Project on Netflix, directed by Sean Levy, starring, of course, Ryan Reynolds, Mark Ruffalo, Jennifer Garner, Walter Scobell. We'll be back to continue discussing it in a bit. Let us know, though. Have you seen it? Did you like it? WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
Time travel exists. This world, our world, everything has already been changed. That's why we're going to put the genie back in the bottle.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Shyamalan, Arvind, and we're reviewing The Adam Project today. So we spent the first part talking about Ryan Reynolds. I wanted to discuss, though, I think I want to say two things at one go. Firstly, this is not a strong science fiction film. It really makes like Avengers look like hard science. You're like, wow, they really nailed it. They got kicked on. You know, it's not exactly, it's not great science fiction. It's not a great time travel movie. It's not really interested in the rules of time travel at all, except to break them all in a wanton fashion. And so the only reason, therefore, that the story continues to work and that you're invested in it, really the performances, I think, and some strong writing, specifically in the ways in which characters interact with each other. And a lot of that had to do with, man, I loved watching Mark Ruffalo and Jennifer Garner reunited so many years after 13, going on 30, I lost it.
Oh, I loved it so much. It did get me thinking, like, how many times has Jennifer Garner played this mom? Like, how many times? But also, how is she continuously good at it? Because I didn't mind it at all. What this reminded me of in a weird way was actually About Time, which is one of my favorite time travel films.
I can't rewatch it, though.
No, I can't. It makes me weep every time. But also because it isn't actually about time travel at all. Instead, it's about loss and relationships and what we might do if we could spend time with someone we had lost. And you know, those kinds of themes. And actually, this film is much more interested in those themes than it is in time travel. And I think that's why having actors like this is important, because I won't lie, when I first saw credits and things like Catherine Keener and Mark Ruffalo in a film like this, I was like, why? Why are they in this movie? Because this honestly sounds like a lightweight film. But once I watched it, I understood why you needed actors like Jennifer Garner and Mark Ruffalo.
So this might be an unpopular opinion. I don't know if you guys feel the same. But watching Mark Ruffalo and Ryan Reynolds in the same scene, like, you kind of see that Mark Ruffalo has better comedic timing. Like, he is a better comedian. Like, he's a funnier person. And I don't know if that's an obvious thing or not. But just watching it, I was like, oh, this guy lands it better than Ryan Reynolds. And that's not something everyone can say, right? But he's so natural and in what he does, and he's able to control the humor so well that Mark Ruffalo actually overshines Ryan Reynolds in a lot of scenes that they're in, and they don't share a lot of scenes. I think one of my issues with the movie was that it goes back to something that you were saying about how it's not a good science fiction film. And I think it's also not a good platform for these heavyweights. So you get people like Zoe Saldana doing their best, like dialing it to 11, like, you know, doing the most. And then you get like Mark Ruffalo being Mark Ruffalo. You get Jennifer Garner being Jennifer Garner at her best. But the movie isn't carrying them the way it should be carrying them. Like, it isn't enough, or it isn't good enough to be holding all these people in it. Zoe Saldana looked like she was overacting in places when she was not. She was just doing what she was paid to do, I guess.
I felt that way about Catherine Keener because the thing is that I feel Mark Ruffalo, the reason why we can say he was so good is because he actually got a lot of heavyweight scenes. He got to do the sciencey stuff that we've seen him do before, but we also got to see him do the really emotional stuff, which we know he can do and is very, very good at. Jennifer Garner, on the other hand, I felt like, man, you could have done so much with her. We already know her as America's mom. You know, she can do so many different things. And the movie, she does so well in it, but the movie doesn't give her an opportunity to stretch that much. Catherine Keener, come on. If you're going to have Catherine Keener in your film, you know, you can give her all the menace in the world and she's going to deliver on that. And it doesn't really do that. And I guess all of which to say, I think that this film is really a father and son movie and is best viewed through that lens. If you start thinking about it as anything other than that, if you start thinking this should be a better family drama, this should be a better comedy, this should be a better time travel or sci-fi movie, it's not going to work. But if you think about it very much as a, this is about fathers and sons and the different ways in which families can function, then for me, it worked on almost every level.
I just wanted to say that on that note about Catherine Keener, with her in this film, I'm officially over aging people down with CGI.
Yes.
I'm over
Lord.
It. They just don't do a good job with actors who are actually genuinely good at what they do. It makes them look kind of just weird. I don't care if they look older than they're supposed to be. Just let them have their own faces. I think for me, it helped a lot to think of this as a TV movie of yore in some sense, like not necessarily a TV movie in a bad movie sense, but the kind of movie that sometimes pops up when you're like watching RTM at a particular time, where you discover that a bunch of really great actors happen to do a slightly B-gradish film and they're all really good in it. You don't care about the film, but it's just really fun to watch them. That's what this reminded me of. And in that sense, you know, we said this felt like an 80s movie. So much of this feels like a throwback to a particular kind of viewing experience that I don't think I expected to get on Netflix of all places.
On that note, how do we feel about Sean Levy and the way Sean Levy makes these movies? Because Free Guy and The Adam Project are kind of the same. Like, they have the same aesthetics, the same pacing, the same Ryan Reynolds. And now he's going to be making Deadpool 3. So how much Sean Levy is too much Sean Levy until it just becomes Dwayne Johnson's movies? You know what I mean? It all becomes of a bunch. And then it's just way too much of the same thing.
I think for me, I don't think this is a popular opinion, but as long as there is pathos underlying it, I'm going to be okay. All the movies that I've liked from Sean Levy's, I'm not talking about Night at the Museum, which I don't have such strong feelings about, but Real Steel, I genuinely love. I really love that movie. I enjoyed Free Guy. And weirdly enough, acknowledging that it's not that great, I really like The Adam Project. And so I think as long as there is an underlying sadness that informs the film, it's going to be okay for me. I think it's when we forget that and it starts just being like robots thumping each other or, you know, CGI comic book characters flipping off of buildings, then I'm going to lose interest. But as long as it's sad, I'm kind of in.
I agree. You know, I think the movies that he's done the best at, that I've liked the most, all have that theme of a hero that's kind of male and alpha male in a certain way, but actually also kind of broken inside. And he does those really well, whether it's Real Steel or Adam Project or Free Guy. And so I think that if he could bring that sensibility to Deadpool, it would be really cool because the landscape is already there. He just needs to kind of push it. I don't know. His storytelling ability, I don't think is the best. So he probably needs a really good cast to kind of see him through.
So I was going to say that I wouldn't mind like a bunch of movies from Sean Levy, but I would want it to be on streaming, with the exception of Deadpool, which of course I'll go see in the cinema. But just making a case for streaming films, I think he makes the perfect streaming platform movies. And if it's going to be like this on either Netflix or Disney Plus or HBO, whatever it is, then I'll watch it. I don't know if I would pay to see these kinds of movies in the cinema, even though they are produced well. I don't know what it is about them. I would prefer to watch them at home.
We've been talking today about The Adam Project, which is out on Netflix, and we'd like to hear from you. Have you seen it yet? Did you like it? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.